have free offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Saha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharma Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Saha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Saha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By a compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by a compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by a compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts, the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts, not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, and in the practice of pure attention, and in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, and in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
we are here to end suffering.
If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
I'm experiencing that it's, let's see, of course, so much bigger than just the antidote to indulgence.
Mm-hmm.
It's the antidote to self-hate or it's just a good place to go in every little movement of life that triggers any kind of judgment or negativity.
Yeah, it's much more than an antidote, but it is that. It's just a good place to go whenever anything is triggered, really, away from that, away from generosity to, or centaur or whatever, any little movement away, that's sort of like a home base. Okay, we can go back to generosity.
Yeah, it's so much more than generosity in terms of the way that it originally arose was the djinn who likes to be creative and likes to have projects and things about which he's enthusiastic. So the generosity arose in the context of, and when she doesn't have that, when that's not available for her, she doesn't know how to get it for herself. Mm-hmm. She needs help.
Mm-hmm.
And the only path that, let's see, the path, the well-worn direction for her is to just flatline. To just go into old, and then it gets karmic patterns that I just realized get labeled indulgence. That's interesting.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's not only then supplying for her the actual material things she might feel she would like, it's a generosity of spirit across the board.
Yeah. Because she's just like, she's like this little being, this little person who loves to have a project, but needs to have a project. You know, because when she does, when she doesn't, some sort of like how that connecting her with the direction of life, with the flow of life. Because when she does and enjoys the, has a lot of enthusiasm, enjoys that creativity and all that, and when that connection is not there and she's sort of left on her own, then she goes into what we all do, karmic patterns. And then self-hate or whoever goes in and calls that indulgence, makes her wrong and bad and whatever, you know, gets labeled that. But that connection with the life or the flow is that generosity of spirit, because in that is, I don't know what you would project, but all possibilities, all, you know, here's some guidance or some insights or, you know, ideas.
Yeah. It's just happier.
Yeah.
It's just, I feel like I can breathe.
Yeah. She's, would you say that she is in that place, I can breathe, is because that's, that in that she's life. She's with life, but also in a way is life.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it doesn't occur to me in those terms exactly, but that is, I mean, what's going on there. And just now when I said, I feel like I can breathe something, and you were reflecting, something occurred to me. I don't remember, but what's occurring in this moment is what that really means, is that I just feel alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can breathe.
It's okay to be alive.
Yeah.
It's okay to be generous with this person.
Yeah.
In any aspect. Just several times a day, I'm noticing that it's just, you know, how energy just rolls along, and something will get triggered. No, this doesn't deserve, this doesn't deserve that generosity of spirit. But it's subtle, it's not that vocal at all.
Right.
It's just a little movement, not this. This is outside. And it's lovely to be seeing that.
Yeah.
Instead of just kind of leaving it on some little level and staying in that, those little tiny drops.
Yes, there's a little bit of tiny when there is that sort of maybe a pulling back, a lack of generosity in it. Well, not that. It's not okay to be generous with that.
Yeah.
And that allows there to... Oh, wait.
Oh, and of course, the next step is it goes in and uses the practice to justify.
Uh-huh.
That this is not how, this really isn't how you should be.
Yeah. Yes, because that's a mask. That pseudo's in a mask for... Because there really is something wrong.
Yeah, there really is something wrong.
On some level, there's something wrong. Wow, that is subtle. And so, you know, so it's so perfect then what you're seeing about generosity being the antidote to that, because that washes all of that away, doesn't it? Yes, anything. We can go to generosity about anything, anytime, anywhere. There's nothing wrong, ever.
Yeah.
no wonder you can breathe, right? It's like, because I can kind of get a sense of, if you never know when that's going to be, I'm speaking of like if you were identified with a sub-personality, when that's going to be withdrawn or something, then you kind of have to hold your breath, like, I don't know what's going to be okay when something's going to be wrong. Yeah. But when the antidote is there, it's like, no, everything's okay.
And as you speak, I realize I'm seeing that on the level of thoughts that arise, or sensation and feeling, and that whole structure arises, I'm not having any trouble, so to speak. I'm going back to the generosity, seeing the trigger and saying, it's okay to think and feel. You know, you've been doing this for a long time. You've proven to yourself. You don't really have any control over that. It's just a little engine doing that somewhere. What I'm hearing as I sit here is that generosity of spirit locks down in action.
Yeah, what locks down in action?
Actions. There really are things you shouldn't do. And then, I suppose, at that place, that's where refuge in Dharma comes in.
Say more about that.
Well, you know, I suppose on some big cosmic level, what anything that an individual human being does just is literally the tiniest energy fluctuation possible. I mean, there's really nothing that it doesn't mean anything, we don't make it mean. And then there is, with the ideal comes the actual, for this human being. There are choices, there are actions that are very difficult not to suffer after having made those choices and taken those actions. Suffering is the reason, it's just what arises in this form as a result. And so, the precepts, the compassionates, what are those? The Eightfold Path.
The compassionates.
Then there's that. You talk.
Well, because the one that was coming in for me was, it's not what, it's how.
Yeah.
Because if conditioning lost some ground now, because you're seeing generosity, so it's lost ground energetically. Well, now maybe we can get you on the actions. Well, okay, it's, you can think anything, but there are really some actions you shouldn't take. No, not even that. You know, even that's okay, because it's not what, it's how. Because when you're in that spirit of generosity, who knows what action would be, appropriate and totally called for that conditioning then will try to come back and nail, in some way. So when you take refuge in the Dharma, that's the one that came up for us. Like, no, it's not what, it's how. Because there's no ground to stick to, conditioning to stand on to point a finger. Because you know when in that acting in that place, who knows?
Yeah.
You know.
I think I followed you. What arose as you were talking was one of the pages in. There's nothing wrong with you, Amy. They kind of run together for me. It's a student-teacher dialogue, and the student asks something about, well, what if I want to intentionally do something harmful. And the response is something like, your question comes from a belief in or in inadequacy, or that that it's something other than your inherent goodness.
Yeah, that's what I mean by that ground. And in that place of that spirit of generosity, there is no where for that kind of question to arise. So therefore, conditioning can't nail us, you know, because we're in a totally different how.
Yeah, I see.
I feel like I've been looking at generosity as well. I've been calling it kindness also. Feels like the same thing, the same process. So I was really struck by that when we were talking last Sunday about that flipping something on its head. You know, the generosity is the antidote to indulgence. And first, I just want to say it was amazing when I got up this morning and left my hermitage, and it was like it's one of those perfect storm, right? So it was very foggy, but it was clearly going to be a nice day. So the sun was coming through, and everything was like, it was like walking in an exquisite haunted house.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! And this season comes every year. You know, every year we get this everything covered with webs.
Uh-huh.
But I've never, in all the years I've been here, seen it like that. Because I think it was just perfect that the mist was on everything. But it's not so much that it pulled it down. It was amazing. I mean, the oak tree in the yard was just standing under it. It was like a wedding. I mean, it was like unbelievable. Uh-huh. Everything was just draped in this, in a wedding.
Wow.
But the reason I thought of that is the a big thing I've been looking at is the generosity of life and trusting that.
Mm-hmm.
And that I've had an amazing experience in the last week or so of an onslaught of doubt coming at me. You know, just all the karmic stuff, very foundational kind of, just wanting to really, really shake things up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just been held in incredible trust.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not wrong in the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
It's not wrong, it's not bad, it's not a mistake.
Yeah.
But there's just this incredible sense of, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so whereas it seems like the antidote to doubt is to, oh, come on, you know, all right, no, it's really, you know, okay, no, it's really true, it's really, but it's like kindness,
uh-huh.
You know, and like was being talked about, generosity feels like it's the place that can hold doubt in trust.
Yeah. There's a profound trust. In fact, it reminds me of a quote. I can't remember. I think it sounds like maybe Hafiz.
Mm-hmm.
That when our world is shaken, we turn to God only to find out that's who's shaking it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I just finished reading the Screwtape Letters again.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like that. There's this sense of, like, you know, if Screwtape were writing to my Wormwood,
uh-huh,
it'd be saying, you are making a huge error here.
Yeah.
Because this incredible doubt that you're throwing at her is having the exact opposite effect.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no fighting against it. There's no, it's wrong. There's no, it's bad. It's just it's like, you know, there's a sense of, like, I mean, like the webs on that tree, we're living in the middle of a miracle.
Yeah.
So in some way that maybe the little I can't see in a given moment, this is part of the miracle.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and so in that way, the doubt and the in the place and the relation in your practice in which it is arising now sounds like it's having the effect in one way of actually shaking any unclarity away because you're seeing mm-hmm. the miracle so clearly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is a, I keep having this image over and over and over of the ego eye is dying. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about that. And so, you know, there we are in that precipice and just jumping. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, you measure over the cliff.
And I was recording about it, actually. I was recording about, like, you know, it's very much like an actual death. And then I was like, yeah, well, except differently. In this case, the ego of the I is dying and we survive. But then I was looking at, but from, I think, the biggest Buddhist perspective, that isn't any different than the death of the form. Because only ego is born and dies, you know, only that conditioned sense. So in a way, it's exactly the same thing, because what I was looking at is, there we are in that precipice of, you know, the death of this incarnation, with, and can we completely just relax into that?
Yeah.
Having no idea, of course, what comes after that. And it feels like this is exactly analogous to that. The ego eye is dying. There's no idea what that is or what existence is without that. But can there be a place of just jumping into it?
Let me see if I'm with you then. So it sounds like what you're saying is that the ego, that what you're experiencing feels like, and you're, you know, everything that you see and know about practice, that the ego is dying.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels analogous to the form dying. Mm-hmm. Because it's sort of like maybe we experience only, quote, inside, mm-hmm. and can there be a tremendous letting go mm-hmm. in faith, mm-hmm. I say, to whatever process that is, because again, there's faith that we know only ego is born or dies.
Right.
And in that exact same way, when this form dies, mm-hmm. we'll be faced with the same exact situation.
Right.
Can we let go mm-hmm. of that form?
Mm-hmm.
And boy, if we can do it with ego, mm-hmm. you know, all along throughout while the form's still here, mm-hmm. yippee.
Yeah.
You know, because then we get to live free
exactly.
in the form.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah. For whatever reason, I don't know what that karma is all about. Who knows when the actual moment comes, if this will be so. But like when I imagine a death moment or that kind of thing, it's interesting that actually really assists me, because I feel like I can feel that letting go into actual death.
Yeah.
And it's ironically, it feels more challenging to let it go now, in a way, to let the ego die.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, there's something very concrete about, okay, well, this is it. Like I've had dreams where, I talked about this years ago, but a car accident dream once where, and I've had a few of them, but this was a really poignant one. I was in a car accident and the car was just coming straight at us, and it was like, okay, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just this profound just relaxing the whole body and letting go and just feeling this rising up.
Mm-hmm.
And even seeing it was in the middle of something that was going on, an intense thing in the project in Zambia. And I just went, well, that didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a sense of like, mm-hmm. wow, I didn't need to be, you know, all concerned over that.
Mm-hmm.
But so, what, as you were saying that, what I've really been seeing is that there really is that, like, almost on a moment-by-moment basis, what the devil, if you will, you know, ego is trying to do is reinsert the attachment to I,
mm-hmm.
like that, just moment by moment by moment, like managing what I want, managing opportunity for me, managing my future, managing this, managing that, and just bringing the eye back. And so I think that's why it just feels like that, what an amazing possibility. And back to the generosity of just jumping.
Yeah.
And just letting that go on a moment by moment basis.
And I would even wonder if that, I mean, not possible, well, yes, possibility, but also actual experience that you're doing that.
Yeah, for
you're,
sure.
Oh, you know, sort of like to get current flex, not something that I'm practicing doing in the future, but it's happening right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Sherry mentioned this on the radio show, it's just stringing those moments together.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. And watching it back arise, and then letting it go.
Watching
it back arise, and letting it go. Watching it back arise, and letting it go.
But really keeping our eye on, I'm doing the process.
Doubt being held in the trust versus the other way around.
Exactly.
The, you know, which is another place that, I mean, you know, we are a lot, which is the being in the doubt and knowing that the trust is possible.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's like, I'm in the midst of these weeds. I know flowers are possible.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, there's that place too. Right, right.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sound like where you are.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've had a series of experiences recently of it feels like just the mentor just being there. And watching conditioning try to take me either into drama, or another mode for me is the anti-drama, which is denial or stoicism or nothing's happening. You know? And I just realized this morning that it happened again, and I didn't even catch that it was happening. But so I received my tax information from I have an accountant do it, and it's appalling. I mean, it's awful, and I've just never been hit like this before. And I looked at those figures, and I couldn't believe it, and I looked at them again. I still couldn't believe it, and I haven't actually written the checks yet, so we'll see how that goes. But I was amazed at the lack of reaction, and what arose in the moment was, well, how did this happen? You know what? How did I let things kind of slip along the way? And it wasn't an accusing thing. It was an inquiry. Uh-huh. How did this happen? And then, obviously, part of it is that the particular kind of income I'm now receiving doesn't have withholding.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all of a sudden the door just slams and there it is. So how can we, going forward, provide for that in the future, in a sense, do our own withholding, and the kind of strategy emerged for what to do? And it was so clear and calm, and it will work. I think it will work. And all of that seemed to happen in this space, but it was not a figuring out.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, so you're describing in this space of you're kind of making the sign about your being, your whole body and everything. Mm-hmm. And instead of going to the karmic, you know, either stoicism or drama, the mentor was just there.
Apparently, because what was there was just inquiry,
uh-huh.
And then, well, so what might we do as we move forward?
Yeah, a plan without the figuring out.
Without any figuring out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just presented itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just so grateful.
Yeah.
It's kind of the third instance in the last several weeks where that has happened, where there's been something unexpected, unwelcome from a conditioned place, very unwelcome from a conditioned place, and just almost no reaction. But it's not a flatlining no reaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, this is what's here now.
Well, it's response instead of reaction.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm reminded of it. I mean, it felt like another way of looking at it is the generosity of life.
Yeah.
You know? 'Cause what conditioning would say is about that is you've got to stop being generous. You can't afford it.
Uh-huh.
You
know what I mean? Uh-huh.
And none of that.
Literally, see, it's literally, right here.
That's right. There it is. None of that. It's a whole different kind of generosity of just what has been expressed, just kind of being held in something that is so much bigger than even those big numbers.
Yeah.
So much bigger than those numbers that there's. It's a restful place.
Uh-huh.
It's a restful place.
Is this it? That it is a it is a restful place, and there's a huge perspective to it.
Yeah.
That can hold it all and sees it all. And I don't know if you're here, you know, at this point or not, but maybe can even be grateful for that whole occurrence, so that you got to experience and recognize once again that place.
Yeah, the perspective is when you say it, a big perspective, it's a big perspective that is not mine.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and in a way, what that does then is it makes this situation not mine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it provides a kind of distance, a depersonalization of it.
Yeah.
That just makes it an interesting situation.
Yeah. So not being an I around something as charged as money and taxes, holy moly, that's big.
Yeah, feels big.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see, because then that, you know, in the next couple of days I do have to write those checks. And it'll be just, I'm just curious to see what that experience is like.
Yeah.
And I can guess that, you know, the conditioning will come in to either put me into a kind of a denial mode where I don't experience it.
Yeah.
Or a oh my God mode, you know, you gotta change our entire lifestyle.
Yeah.
or whether I just write the checks and see what happens.
Well, and what's occurring to me is that you can sort of prime the pump somewhat too, you know, make some recordings. Okay, Wednesday morning I'm writing the checks. I want everyone to have the mentor here.
Tuesdays and 15th.
Oh, okay, sorry. Tuesday morning. And so, you know, basically, you know, bring that intentionality to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, use the recordings as a way to do that. All of the tools, you know, that we have to really to really set ourselves up for being in that place where our hearts are at rest.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Koya.
Well, a few things arising this morning in the conversation. One that keeps coming up is the story of the tortoise and the hare. I've been on a marathon recording and listening assignment to just keep as a practice to focus my attention. And this morning I stumbled on a recording that I had done of, it's an excerpt from Roshi Katagiri talking about how to live life as a Buddha. And it's comparing it to the story of the tortoise and the hare. And it's just, he talks about in order to live life as a Buddha, you need to be like the tortoise. Drop all labels, you know, and put one foot in front of the other. Not keep turning around to look if the hare is gaining on you. Or if anybody else is gaining on you, or comparing yourself to anybody, you know, and to just that one step at a time, plodding toward, you know, in the direction that you're headed. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a really helpful, it's a helpful image for me. Because it's real easy for me to get into, I often get into the label of, I don't have much time, you know, that my age and that, you know, that I got to get, I, you know.
That's sort of that.
Yeah.
How far am I? How far are they?
And it all comes down to you're moving too slow.
Mm.
You know, that you just gotta get. And of course, and that just serves as the opposite.
Yeah. Who can do anything with someone like, hurry. That's a hard time. Yeah.
Really. Mm-hmm. And wow, I just completely went blank there, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry.
I can go slow. I got some guidance this week about a practice I was doing, and you know, taking some while to do it. And the guidance was, and that's okay. And you may want to continue it for another month after that, and another month after that, and another month after that, and there's no rush.
Wow.
Mm. And it's like, what? it's just, there's no, I mean, I don't know. That was, it was just a good mirror for me, you know, that there's just no rush.
There's no rush.
No rush. Because, boy, I could see at that moment that someone was really operating in the rush mode.
Yeah. And what spoke to you about the tortoise and the hare, the tortoise's model, is that there was sort of a deep knowing that there's no rush. I'm just walking the path. I'm just going, doing the race, you know, the way that I do the race. And no sense of urgency.
No sense
of even really needing to finish. We can project just a plodding along and walking the path.
Yeah, just like you were reflecting, it just arose for me. I think tortoises live a heck of a lot longer than here.
That's right, they say.
it's that sort of slowing down and I don't know where this is going. But I do know where I have to put my foot next.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll just put it there.
Yeah.
And then I'll see what happens next.
Yeah.
And to just take the attention off that constant goal orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I saw this morning was like, listening to Sherry, I think it was something she wrote in one of the blogs about we live in love. I got it for the first time. That, you know, it's not that I live in love like I'm like something outside of me. I need to fall in love with something external, you know, to be in love.
Mm-hmm.
But I swim in love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is the air. And it is what I move and live and have my being in, is love.
Yes.
And I was just really grateful to,
I don't have to go anywhere.
I don't have to go anywhere. It just kind of like just really tied into the, it's okay to slow down because I'm in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, isn't that it? That there's no hurry because you're already here.
Yeah.
There's no finish line because it's all complete here in this moment.
Yeah. And it's really gorgeous. and there really isn't anything to fix.
And that's why I project you can have all the time that you need for a project, you know, for whatever it is, because there's nothing to fix, nowhere to get. So it's that generosity of spirit. It's all here.
There's just no game scorekeeper. There's no, you know, goal to make, even though we are in the phase of upping our game, you know, it's a way different game
and upping it looks way different than a scoreboard would.
Exactly. Just got this image of the scoreboard just being engulfed in climbing vines that were full of flowers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like that. Let that be the goal.
Yeah.
Let that beauty be the goal. Let that,
Let
that kind of...
That's covered in love as well, swimming in love as well.
So anyway, it's a good day.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anna?
There's lots of writing here to look at, and I've been exploring guidance, what guidance is, what it's like to live in a process of guidance, what it's like to train to be in a process of guidance. Mm-hmm. And
Can y'all hear her okay back there?
And something that I heard in group on Thursday just really spoke to where this exploration is. And it was around checking in on a project, on a collaborative project. And what I heard the guy say was that when we check in to see if we're okay, it's annoying.
Uh-huh.
When we check in to find out how we can best serve the project, it's helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's exactly where this exploration is on guidance. That there's, you know, there can be a tendency to check in for guidance from that ego identity, looking for, am I okay? To do with right, wrong, good, bad, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And then there's been this intention to practice seeking guidance from a place of how does this serve the project of waking up and ending suffering
mm-hmm.
that isn't attached to an I.
Yeah. So how can I be modeling and living in that place of no I, but also wanting, being open to the guidance that is bigger than my little piece of, let's say, the project.
Right.
Not to be an I. How to be a cell in the body of the Buddha, but not be an I. That's a cell in the body of the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as I was looking at all of that, and just noticing those ego I processes of doubt, assessment, right, wrong, mm-hmm. good, bad, all that, you know, the keeping score that keeps ego alive.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking along and what dropped in was, we are all perfectly unfolding processes of awakening.
Mm-hmm. We are all perfectly unfolding processes of awakening.
Yeah, which sounds just like a tortoise.
yeah, that's right.
And, you know, like, it just feels connected with that exploration of guidance, you know, how to live as a perfectly unfolding process of awakening, not an
mm-hmm.
I, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it takes that personal quality out of it. For everything that, you know, if we're living in an experience of everyone as a perfectly unfolding process of awakening, there can be no comparison, judgment,
scorekeeping. Yeah, there's no individual to be in relationship with any other individual, because
mm-hmm.
the individual doesn't exist. We are all unfolding processes that when, and so tell me if this is where you're seeing about the guidance part, that when we are in that place of being,
mm-hmm.
then the guidance just is, you know, because, let me ask you, what's your experience about that, about receiving guidance from that place?
Oh, it's an adventure.
An adventure.
Exciting.
Because we never know what's going to be next in the unfolding from that place.
Yeah. And it's a curiosity that's very open and collaborative,
uh-huh.
rather than this pseudo curiosity of of wondering about things in isolation, like, oh,
yeah.
is that a good thing, bad thing, is that, am I, oh, you know.
Yeah.
It's a curiosity that's directed to the project of waking up and ending suffering.
Yeah, and being a part of that project in community, like, yeah, because you're working here with, on projects with, within this community, and there is that sort of, that we're all unfolding together around this project or that project, and there is an excitement or a sense of adventure that we don't know how you know how it's all going to end, but we're in all the, in this together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there more?
I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. I've just been really curious and kind of exploring the whole thing about kind of the tortoise and the hare. Not, I didn't think of those images, but how it feels being present, and it, when present, it doesn't feel like there's time really. It just feels like everything opens,
mm-hmm.
and life kind of just presents itself, and answers to questions just kind of fall in, and then there's that falling out of that place, and then there's time, and there's too much to do or not enough mm-hmm. of something, and what to do about it, and it's just seems like it's becoming more and more obvious that it's, that whole thing is just a manifestation of the two places we can live,
mm-hmm.
you know, either present here and now or not.
Yeah.
In that place, it's all the messages of egocentric karmic conditioning are in place, in
yeah.
play.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you're watching yourself sort of going back and forth between
yeah.
those two places of. The, you know, the egocentric karmic conditioning self hate space of
mm-hmm.
time and not enough or
mm-hmm.
hurry or whatever
mm-hmm.
that feels like, kind of a constricted place,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to this place of center where,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that time is timeless. It's open,
mm-hmm.
expansive.
Mm-hmm.
There's everything just arises,
mm-hmm.
and so you're applying to that to the sense of time.
Yeah, and just the sense of life in general. You
mm-hmm.
know that. What's real and what's not real, and
mm-hmm.
just the whole experience of being here as a human in form and
mm-hmm.
having an opportunity to possibly end suffering, you know.
Yeah.
And it just seems like it just gets clearer and clearer that it totally is not anything about what.
Yeah.
It's all about how. And when there's the grace of being present, it's so clear that there really is nothing to do and nowhere to go and no one to go.
Yeah.
It's all right here, right now.
Yeah.
And then somebody gets on a horse and starts going somewhere, trying to go somewhere else. Because,
yeah.
you know, some bit of karma got a hold and off we go again.
And off we ride in that direction for
yeah.
a while until we remember and come back.
Yeah. I did something that sort of, I created a symbol for myself. And it wasn't anything I thought about. I've had this clock on the wall. I inherited it with the place I'm living in now. It just was there. They didn't
mm-hmm.
take it. And, you know, it's kind of like one of those clocks you can get at CVS. It's not anything special, but it was there ticking, and so, you know, I thought it was keeping time, and then I would look, and it wouldn't be the right time, and I'd look, and it didn't match my watch, and, you know, something there would be that kind of, well, ticking, what's wrong? So I kept playing with it, I got a new battery, all this stuff, and it always kept ticking, and it never kept time. and so it was just,
like
it was interesting, and there was a nail there, and if I pulled it out, I was either going to have to put something else there, or I was going to have to do something. It wasn't an easy fix. So I took the clock down. Now, I gave no thought about this at all. It was just the most interesting thing. I took the clock down. I went into the other room, and I got a roll of the wide, clear tape. I cut a piece that was big enough to go across the face of the clock, and I got a great big, wide, Sharpie pen, and I wrote on that tape, right on the face of the clock, N-O-W. And I put it back up, and I said, now I know what time it is. It was so fun.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and I never gave it a thought, and it just... I was actually kind of being taken along with the person
yeah.
who did it. I didn't know what she was doing, really.
Yeah, well, you know, that is just so, that is so much of what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah.
That in that, that there is, it's, it ties in with guidance, and it ties in with what we're talking about, just, you know, arising in the winter, is that it's always there.
Yeah.
That guidance, you know, you were just taken along, and, yeah, you know, there was no me doing it. You were just being sort of swept down the river to this delightful idea to right now, I've got to cross the clock. Now, there, now I always know what time it is.
And now you don't have to waste any more of your precious time fussing with this stupid clock. You, it wasn't keeping time anyway.
And life has a sense of humor.
It has a sense of humor, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
That's funny that what just dropped in on the screensaver on my phone that I've had, it's Pooh Bear and Piglet.
Mm-hmm.
And Pooh says, you know, what day is it? And Piglet says, it's today. And Pooh says, ah, my favorite day. So that really reminds me of that. That's all I have.
Yeah, Dan.
So bringing it back to generosity. Just thinking that generosity can really take you by surprise in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier this morning, I was approached and, you know, someone said, I have a gift for you. And I was thinking, like, what could you possibly give me? And not in like a sarcastic kind of way, but like, what could you give me? Like, what am I going to get? Am I going to get something? Am I going to get like a pine cone or just something? I don't know. And what I received was like a little allergy tablet. Just for, you know, to help me out for the rest of the day. I was thinking, that is just super nice. I didn't even ask for anything. I wasn't even sneezing yet. It was just someone that was able to just think about just me or my well-being. I could have been 30 seconds late coming out of the dorm, or 30 seconds early, and totally missed this opportunity to receive something nice. And it just made me feel great. And then it just got me thinking, especially with the conversations right now, how, you know, it's always there.
Yeah.
It's always there. And I've been thinking about, you know, karma and how it's just always there. I just have never really paid much attention to it.
Yeah.
Bringing it back to earlier, I was mentioned about kindness parties, or kindness party. That kindness party has always been there, but I've lost track as to how many times I've had my own self-pity party, self-loathing party. And those parties are invitation only, but it's one miserable looking piece of paper, one miserable looking invitation. And it's just a one person party that gets you nowhere. And then the kindness party, it's always there. It's open invitation. It's come and go as you please. It starts at the same time, it never ends. It's at whatever location, it's so convenient, it's impossible to forget. Or to, you know, lose the directions.
Yeah.
It's, you choose to take the wrong turn. And it's just got me thinking about how, like I mentioned earlier, how it's just always there.
Yeah.
And it's like for me, like going to a grocery store, discovering a new aisle of food. It's always been there.
Yeah.
You know, the ethnic food section has always been there. You know, I just decided one day to just go down and traverse and explore this wonderful aisle that's just there. And I lose track. It's easy to get wrapped up.
Yeah.
So for me, I just needed a voice that I realize it's there, and now I just have to make sure that either I get there on my own, or that I'm reminded of that it's there. And, you know, the kindness parties can go on forever. Those are great. It's a little unnatural for me to speak that way, to acknowledge that people, either I've done enough good things in the past that people want to be nice to me or choose to be nice to me, or maybe it makes them feel better, but I must have done a lot of cool stuff to, a lot of nice things, I should say, that warrants that people that it's there, whether it's someone else trying to just be kind and generous for their sake or my sake or whatever, it doesn't matter.
Well,
it's all positive.
Yeah,
it's all there.
And what I think you're pointing to, and it's so such, it's really sort of fundamental to practice, which is kindness just is.
Mm-hmm.
Kindness, generosity, life, you know, whatever word and experience, particular nuanced experience we want to put on it. It always is. I love your example. It's the come as you go. Invitation's always open. Everybody's there. You know where it is. It's always right here. Mm-hmm. And we are the, you know, in some way we're able to come to the party and then leave the party. And then come to the party and then we get pulled away from the party. Or like, you know, at the aisle, it just drops in. Hey, maybe I'll go over here in the aisle in the grocery store. And then all of these delightful surprises that you never even expected. Mm-hmm. But it's really, it is that practice of being here. You know, we do have to show up to the party. The party's not going to come drag us out of where we are. We have to go there.
Yeah, and it's also, and you have to go there, and also you have to enjoy the moment. Because, you can take this generosity, like, okay, I already have one, thanks. Yeah. Or you could easily just scoff it away.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm too involved in myself, or I don't need that right now, or you're just doing this to make yourself feel better. No. You got to take a step back and realize that, hey, this moment's, and it's fleeting. Like I mentioned, I could have been 30 seconds early or late and totally missed that.
Yeah. Well, or you could have even gotten it, been given the gift, and still totally missed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because you would have, like you said, just had some other story going on. I mean, didn't that make himself feel good or whatever it is. But there was a presence there that was able to let the kindness in.
Mm-hmm.
There,
That's what I'd say.
That's really.
I was looking at how surprised I always am at the. So I came down pretty identified, and I'm always astounded that it doesn't take much time to disidentify. Mm-hmm. You know, like making decisions out of being identified is dangerous. I just watched it, this morning I just watched it shift. Mm-hmm. Just by sitting here paying attention to my breathing and what people were saying.
Yeah, just by sitting there you saw it shift.
Yeah, I just saw it shift. And I think that, ego did not want me to see it. Because here's what I was looking at before I came. I was on a few phone calls, and we had assignments to look at. And I too, so since the email class, which was the end of January, right, beginning of February, mm-hmm. I think I had this subtle backlash thing happen. But it reminds me, and I said this morning in one of the calls, of there is a thing in the Screwtape letters, mm-hmm. and I always remember this. This must be what ego does for me all the time. But essentially, the guys in the library. He has this experience, right?
Yeah.
And the devil's like, okay, make him hungry or whatever that is, then just get him out, okay, we're going to go have lunch, and then he's going to forget.
So he's on the verge of this atheist.
Well, he's had it, right? Yeah. He had it. Oh my gosh,
Yeah.
Okay, this is a dangerous situation. You make it really subtle. He's hungry. Okay, wow, I'm going to think about that later.
You should think of it after lunch.
Exactly. Uh-huh. But I know that's what's happening in my life because there is this subtle... Like, it's not normally what it has done to me. I mean, historically, there's a lot of sensation, there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of addiction to right and wrong and good and bad and fear and self-esteem. That's been the... So I can feel it, I know it's there, I can acknowledge it, I can breathe through it, But this, it's like it came in a way that I didn't see it. Uh-huh. It must have said something like, wow, because here's what I said on the call this morning. I am an email, I identify myself as an email class resistor over the years. I was involved when we first doing those classes and they took forever to make happen. Anyway, so, but this last email class, I made, I decided I am going to just bring as much as I possibly can to it. And I actually got a lot out of it. Uh-huh. And so after that, I don't know what there was, to tell you the truth, but all I know is that my energy shifted a little, that there's been a belief that I can't even articulate it except that, I don't know how to say it, except the example is it's Lent and I haven't done much. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like Catholic mm-hmm. and Buddhist. I mean, this is like the perfect time to have done, put everything in place, an extra recording. And I mean, normally it's like a New Year's resolution.
Should have done something. Yeah, it's all Sunday for God's
sake. Well, you know, actually, there's not a lot of me, I know, next week, right? It's Easter and it's over. But back to drinking those coffees that I, the thing that I, but usually it really is a renewal time, kind of like January 1st or going on retreat or an email. Usually there's a gearing back up, like extra willingness and eyes wide open and lots of energy to make it happen. And the opposite has been so lately. And they're actually, I mean, there probably have been a lot of meetings, but I'm not aware. I'm more aware of, as I've said it in group, lying in bed in the morning and it's cold, although it's getting warmer now, and starting the daily recollection, lying down. And then I start calculating, well, you know, okay, daily recollection usually takes about 10 minutes, so I only have to sit for 20 minutes when I sit up. You know, there's just this, like, subtle, let's just make it a little more comfortable, and, you know, you don't really need to do this thing, and you know, it's just been a lulling.
Yeah, it is like the screw tape letters, isn't it?
Yeah. It is a screw tape letter, so I am going to, I hope, pull it out of the drawer and start reading it again. So that's
well, you've already had the experience. You've already seen it, what it is.
This would just kind of help name it. You know, I'm not alone. I'm not the only. So here's what's up. Everybody else has gotten really into all these new things that are happening. They're probably, you know, got their charts and got their things. But when I read the screw tip letters, clearly he's writing it about all of us.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just me being the screw tape, screw up. It's sort of, wait a minute, I'm human and I'm wormwood and what's his name?
And just to bring it back full circle to where, I mean, it'd be remiss if we didn't mention that. And sitting here, you disidentify.
I know. It hates that because that makes it way too easy.
Yes.
You know,
because, you know, it's like you didn't go off to lunch and think about it later.
Right.
You're sitting here. Right. And that's where it all happens. And that happens, I mean, I project all the time in your life. But of course, you're not going to ever get credit for that in that system. Right.
Oh, right. No, definitely was.
So you're the one that doesn't do the
projects.
You're the one that doesn't get into room. You're the one that doesn't, you know, like the email class. But what it doesn't ever say is, no, I'm the one that actually decided, made a decision, and gave it my whole heart and got a lot out of it.
Right. Well, I do have that on the recording. You know, that whole thing of the truth is, I sit every day. The truth is, I record and listen. The truth is, I did that email class, even though I maybe didn't want to. You thought I did, made me think I didn't want to.
And I don't know who else, you know, I mean, it's pretty good to lie in bed and be doing the daily recollection. There's a lot of other things you could be thinking about.
I could say that. I could say the truth is, at least I'm saying it for God's sake. You know?
At least I know it's Lent. At least I know it's Lent.
You know, it totally changes the whole thing. At least I haven't, you know, I mean, there are a couple things I've done.
Well, and the thing is if that gets you out of the conversation.
Right.
Then that's
the... And into the... I mean, all I had to do was listen to the description of walking, you know, we're all one, right? So somebody starts talking about the air and the spider webs and you know, I'm there.
And you're there.
I'm there. You know, it's the gift of Sangha. I'm there. And it's just because I showed up this morning. And it's all I have to do is just hit the pillow. Just come when it's scheduled, you know. We make it so much of a bigger deal. Or my stories do. Yeah. And always, as you said, twisting it. I mean, let's face it, everybody in this room, how can you twist it against us? Mm-hmm. We're like the devoted. I remember Sherry saying that one time when I was living here years ago. Somebody was beating themselves up for licking, you know, like stirring, and it was a cake mix, and taking a lick out of it. She was like, for God's sake!
Enjoy
the chocolate!
Well, that's a good reminder. Thank you. And thank you all.